Now, Tosfos on Daf Ches Amud Aleph, which we began last time, Dibur Masal Motzi Shemra, quotes Rabbeinu Tam. And Rabbeinu Tam understands that the machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim with regard to Motzi Shemra revolves around the father's claim against the son-in-law to pay knas. And Rabbeinu Tam takes a very unique stand here as far as the kuf slum, the 100 slum of knas. And he says the following. The father brought witnesses. I'm sorry, let's start with the Baal. The Baal brought witnesses. Hevi Baal Edim. Shezinsa. Vehukhishu. So that's the key word, vehukhishu. In other words, another two witnesses came in, and they said it couldn't have been that at that time she had a znus, because at that time, at that place, because she was with us at that time, in that place. I'm sorry, at that time she was with us in another place, and there was no znus. That's called hakhasha. And Rabbeinu Tam says in such a case that the Baal brought Edim and then they were subject to Akhosha, he, the Baal, could be sued now for 100 slum, for knas. He's considered a Motzi Shemra. And then later on, Tosfos is going to say, even if there was no Akhosha, but let's say, for example, the Edim of the Baal are not able to answer all the interrogations, and there'll be some sort of a lo kivnu edusam, which again, if you're following the text, you'll see this about 6 lines up from the bottom, lo kivnu edusam. So that too comes under the same category and should be equated with hakhasha. And therefore, the Baal, in this case, since his edim were disqualified, he will pay mea sloim knas. Now, again, Rabbeinu Tam gives a couple of options. Why were they disqualified, his Edim, the Baal's Edim? Either because they were subject to Akhosha, she couldn't have been at that time in that place, she was with us elsewhere at that time. Or because Lo Kivnu Edusam, in other words, in the interrogations, there was some sort of either discrepancy, or we'll see soon that there's one Rishon who's going to interpret Rabbeinu Tam that even if one of the witnesses cannot answer the question at all, he just says any yodea, that's also lo kivnu edusam. But we'll get to that later. That's already much more advanced. So if you happen to have the pages here that we gave out last time, then on the bottom of page Tzadi Aleph, he quotes the Chidushi Aran, which you'll see on the bottom of your page on the left, the last four four lines on the page. And the Ran's question is an obvious question, and that is, when we have Akasha, when we have Trey, two Edom against two Edom, we simply don't know who's telling the truth. And therefore the Ran asks, why should the Baal in this case pay a Knas Va'adayin? Here on the top of Tzadi Bes, we still could assume, or possibly assume, that the Baal brought in Edim that are true. They're not false. They're true Edim. They're not lying. They're telling the truth. Why? Because we don't know which of the two Edim is telling the truth. It's a toss-up. It's two against two. So how can we say that in this situation we don't know whether the Baal's Edim are telling the truth or not? We simply don't know. It's what you call an exact suffix, a 50-50 issue. How can we then sue the Baal and make him pay mea kesef? That's the difficulty in Rabbeinu Tam. And that's what we began last time, to contrast Rabbeinu Tam with the Rambam. The Rambam says that the only time the Baal will pay mea kesef is if his witnesses were subject not to hakhasha, but rather to hazama. That was the chiddush of the Minchas Chinuch, and it was medayikin from the Loshon of Rambam, that the Rambam only mentions a case of hizimu ha'edim she'evi ha'baal. he does not expand it to a case of Hukhishua Edim Shehevi Abal. Hence, there's a machlokas between the Rambam and Rabbi Nitam. Rabbi Nitam expands the case of Knas, the Me'asela, to include even a case of Hukhishu, where we don't know whether the Baal's Edim are telling the truth. The Rambam limits the Chi of Knas to the case of Huzmu, where we believe, without a shadow of a doubt, that the first pair of Edim perjured themselves, and they told a falsehood. Hence, the Baal simply brought false witnesses. He hired false witnesses to come in. He made him an offer that he can't refuse. But Rabbi Nitam is saying, no, we don't know whose witnesses are truth and we're not, but there's a Hukhishu. And if there's a Hukhishu, then the Baal is subject to the law of Knas. And at the very end of the paragraph that starts Vehine, you'll see the last two lines. Tzarech bir, shitas Rabbi Nitam, amai chayev kuf sloin. Havi Safik. We don't know whether they rely on his Edim or not rely on the Edim. Should we rely on the first Edim they're telling the truth or the second pair of Edim? So it's a toss-up. And in such a case of a Safik, how can you force the Baal to pay 100 saw? Right? That's 100 sell, excuse me. That's a violation of the principle of Amotzi Mechavel of Araya. Misafik, we don't force someone to pay. So what we began to discuss last week is the following question. We'll soon see that this question revolves around the shita of Rav Chisda. Rav Chisda is the one who will allow us to raise a very revolutionary question, a very far-reaching and radical question. Is it possible that in the case of Trey of Hakosha, we invalidate and disqualify the first Eidus B'toras Vadai? So Rabbi Osei, you have to help me here. I don't know at what speed I'm allowed to speak here. You know, I can use terms and then I can find out that you don't know what I'm talking about. So then I haven't gained anything. So tell me if I have to take the 5 minutes to explain what it means, Bitoras Vadai. Don't be embarrassed.
Please.
Yes? Okay. So that'll slow us down, but it's okay. The main thing is that we understand, okay? I'm going to write on the board, Bitoras, forget it, I don't have time for that. But you'll write it in your note, Bitoras Vadai. There are two ways of defining and categorizing the psul, the disqualification of Eidus. One is Bitoras Vadai, and one is Bitoras Safek. Bitoras Vadai means we're certainly going to exclude them. We're certainly going to disqualify them. We're not going to have any doubts about it. We're not looking over our shoulders and questioning. That's called Bitoras, everybody? Vada. Bitoras Safek means we don't really know. We can't accept their testimony because they haven't proven themselves. And when in doubt, leave it out. But it's not Bitoras Vada. We really, really simply don't know. And there's going to be a major difference between the two in the case where the lover, who borrowed the money, brought in Edim to support his claim that he already paid up this chov. So the Malva is holding on to a shtar, let's say. The Malva says, look, I have a shtar that says you owe me money. Well, that shtar is signed by two witnesses, and until we have reason to question the shtar, then the Malva will collect $1,000 from the Lova. The Lova now produces two witnesses to testify that he actually paid the money back. He returned the chov. Now we have these Edim. What is their status? If their status is Bitoras Vadai, that means we throw them out of court. They're completely disqualified. They have no weight in the court. But if we say Bitoras Safek, then we don't know. And if we don't know, we can't force the Lova to pay up for a shtar that may be valid or may not be valid. So those are the far-reaching repercussions or implications of saying that the Edim apostle Bitoras Vadai. Meaning we don't listen to what they have to say, we don't consider it, and they can't even support the lova, which is called lachzuke mamon, meaning to hold on to his money. Okay. Now, how could we say in treu trei, when we have two edim against two edim, that the edim are posel b'toras vadai? I mean, I can understand b'toras safek, but how do you understand and justify b'toras vadai? So that has to do with Rav Chisda. Rav Chisda is... has a statement in Masechta Bava Basra, which you'll see here in a paragraph that starts Vehine, but again there are probably five paragraphs that start Vehine. But you'll see a paragraph that says Vehine b'Bava Basra Daf Lamed Aleph, and there Rav Chisda says the following: Bahadi, Okay, if you're counting up from the bottom of this paragraph, because you may want to underline it. Some people like to see the text and underline it. So you'll count up one, which is really a small line. One, two, three, four, five, six lines up before the end of the paragraph. V'Rav Chisda Amar. And here are the words you want to underline, which are four and a half lines up from the bottom. Bahadi Sadi Shakri Lomali. That why should we even consider the possibility of listening to these two Eidim? They are Sahadi witnesses, Shakri, that tell the lies. Lomali, why should we rely on this? And the Rashbam says, and you'll see this two lines before the end of the paragraph, Vehine HaRashbam, sorry. Svir Leil HaRashbam Dil Rav Chizda Psulim Rak Misafek. So when Rav Chizda said, and it sounds like he's really dramatic about it, that why do we care about these witnesses? What he meant was that these witnesses are disqualified B'Torah Safek. However, in the balance of this paragraph, which is on the left column, what we're going to try to prove is that according to one opinion, against the Rashbam, the sheet of Rav Chizda is that the Eidim HaMukhashim are Psulim B'Torah Vadai. And that's going to help us a lot for our Rabbeinu Tam in Motzi Shema. How do we see this in Tosfos? Tosfos says that the Gemara tells us that Hazama goes way beyond Hakasha. Right? Because that's the Chiddush of Hazama. Tosfos asks the following question. Why do we have to rely on the Chiddush of Hazama? Forget about the Chiddush Hazama. Every Hazama, by definition, includes Hakasha. What difference does it make if you tell me that the Lover was with us in a different place and he couldn't have borrowed the money, or if you, the Eidim, are with us in a different place? In both cases, you have at least Hakasha. The Torah jacks up Hazama in the case where they say the Eidim are with us in a different place. That's called Imanu Ha'isem. And that has severe repercussions as far as the Eidim is concerned. But as far as the kashrus of the Eidim from now on, and the Eidim from now on, there's no difference, says Tosis, between Hakasha and Hazama. In both cases, we accept the opinion of Rav Chizda, Bahari Sari Shakri Lomali. You see clearly that Tosis didn't make even a hair's breadth of a difference between Hakasha and Hazama as far as the psul of the Eidim and the Eidus, according to Rav Chizda. And Tosis really is only able to understand the statement of Chidushu, which is attributed to Rava, if Rava holds like the other opinion, not the opinion of Rav Chizda. And that's the opinion of Rav Huna. Rav Huna happens to say, Zubav if neatzmamida v'zubav neatzmiza, that we can accept each one of these two kitos individually for future cases. But according to Rav Chizda, we cannot accept the principle called Chidushu, because there's no difference between Hakash and Hazama. They're both B'Torah Vadai. And that, my friends, could really, really help us understand Rabbeinu Tam. Because again, what was the Ron's cash on Rabbeinu Tam? How could Rabbeinu Tam possibly say that the Eidim HaMukhashim of the Baal, which we have to throw out of Beis Din, therefore the Baal has to pay what? He has to pay mass seller of Knas. Why does he have to pay the Knas? We don't know who's telling the truth. Well, the answer is, according to one opinion at least, in Tosfos, which appears in Baba Basra and Daf Lamed Aleph, when we say that we, according to Rav Chizda, Bahari Sari Shakri Lomali, what are we going to do with these Eidim that Shakranim? What he meant is that we disqualify them B'Torah Vada. Even if they were to come and support the position of the Lover, we would still not believe them, and we would force the Lover to pay the Malva, because these Eidim are worthless. They are completely excluded B'Torah Vada. Okay. So if that be the case, then again, just to reiterate, we can answer the question of the Ran on Rabbeinu Tam. How can Rabbeinu Tam say that we're going to extract a knas of Me'as Sof from this Baal because it's Eidim or Mukhashim, when we don't know who's telling the truth? The answer is that according to Rav Chizda, when we throw out the Eidim, they are totally worthless, absolutely disqualified, B'Torah Vada. Hence, the Baal brought Psulei Eidus to testify on his behalf. he's fabricating this whole story, and he's slandering his wife, and therefore he has to pay mass cell. You see, in my fast-paced shiur this morning, we were discussing a different aspect of Motzi Shema. That's the Dinei Nefashos aspect. If the Edom are testifying against her, and therefore we could put her to death, and therefore we'd need 23 judges, that was the shiur that we had this morning. Now we're discussing in Motzi Shema the monetary dimension of Motzi Shema. When the father sues his son-in-law for slander, and is suing the son-in-law for 100 sa'ah. And the reason for that is because the father brought in witnesses to disqualify the witnesses that the Baal brought in. Hence the Baal's story, you know, when he comes to Bez and yelling and screaming that she had this relationship, it's all fabrication. How do I know it's a slander? Because he brought in witnesses, and the father was able to disqualify those witnesses with hakrasha, says Rabbi Nitan, because that hakrasha generates a Bitoris Vada. Now, if we're asking the question, does hakrasha generate a vadai, then the real address for that is a sugya in Kiddushin on Daf Samache. And this you'll see in the fourth paragraph that starts Vehine Plugtas. Okay, so what happens in Kiddushin Daf Samache? What we have is a case which you'll see on line 6 or so in this paragraph. Shnayim bo mimdina sayam, and these two witnesses come from a far off place. V'isha imahem, and there's a woman amongst the group. And ze omer ishti, one of the two men says, "This is my wife. I want to introduce you to my wife." V'zeh omer zu ishti. And the other one says, "I want to introduce you to the wife." The problem is, it's the same woman. Mm-hmm. So we have now a hakrasha. Now the woman claims that she's not married to either of them. So the Gemara wants to know, can we be mesader kedushin for this woman when she finally finds a husband, or does she need a get? And if she needs a get, from which one of these two husbands does she need a get? So the final maskani of the Gemara is, at least the way the Ravid understands it, and he's quoted by the Rashba, so that you'll see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 lines up before the end of the page, that Bisha Ein Makhishin, Elu Es Elu, if they left out a time, you know, they didn't say, "Well, I married her at such and such a time." And the other one said, "No, at that time she was married to me." Right? But rather they gave a general testimony, and they said, "Well, she's my wife." They didn't pinpoint the moment that the Kiddushin took place. Says the Rashba, in such a case, she will need a get from both of them. Why? Because we're going to assume that one married her at, you know, the beginning of the month, or the beginning of the year, whatever it was, and he divorced her, and then the second one married her after she was divorced from the first husband. But says the Rashba, and this you'll see four lines up before the end of the page, im hayu makhishim elu ezelu, if they contradict each other, and each one says at a certain time she was my wife, and the other one says no, at that time she was my wife, and it's irreconcilable, then in such a case, lo haysa tzricha get me'echad mehem, she doesn't need a get from any of them. Whenever you hear that as a psak, you know it's a radical revolutionary psak. Because there are millions of cases where a woman needs a get misafek. But to say that a woman can get married without a get at all, that's pretty way out. That's a landmark tshuva of Moshe Feinstein about civil marriage. That a Jewish man and a Jewish woman were married civilly and they didn't get kiddushin. And now she wants to marry someone else. Does she need a get from the first husband, in quotation marks? But there was never chub of a kiddushin. And I don't know if you ever heard of Rabbi Yehuda Henkin, all of a sudden. Rabbi Henkin was of the opinion that she would need a get in order to allow, because civil marriage is also that living together as husband and wife. But Rabbi Moshe came up with a landmark tshuva that if there's no possibility of tracking down the husband or getting a get out of him, then we're going to allow her to get married without a get. I mean, whenever you hear that, you know you're in radical territory to allow a woman to get married without a get. When there's a presumption that she was married. Here there are two men, each one are claiming that she's married. This one is claiming she's married to me, and this one to me. And we're going to throw them both out. And she doesn't need a get from either of them. Why? Because Hakhasha creates a vadai. And again, they both mention the time period, right? So there's an absolute irreconcilable collision between the two. The contradiction is irreconcilable. That's called Hakhasha. She doesn't need a get from any of them, meaning it's not even a suffix. It's a vadai that she's not married to either of them. And that's what he says here on page Tzadi Gimel, on the right column, if you drop down about 10 lines. May I arrive it, okay, you'll see a line that starts Ubein Liosa Avin. Avis, excuse me. By the way, if I'm bothering with the text, how many people in the class want me to show you where the text is? One person.
All right. Did you know right here?
In the one that I gave out. Because I'm slowing myself down. I only have 45 minutes for the shiur. And I'm doing so because I want to show you the text inside, in case you want to underline it. Or, so I need a show of hands. Okay, I got one vote here. Mitch, maybe you're enough to tip the scale here. But I would be more excited if more than one person in the room was interested in seeing the text inside.
If one person is makhish, maybe you can forget about it.
Forget.
It's good to see it.
It's good to see it. So at least we're up to two people.
Three.
Oh, good. Three, four. Wow. Okay, now it's good. And maybe Reuven, you also want a seat inside. So we're up to six already, right? Okay, that's good. So again, you're on page Tzadi Gimel, which you'll see on the top left, and you're on the right column, and you're going to drop down approximately, I'm just estimating about 12 lines. I don't have the time to count. And you'll see a line that starts Uben. And if you move your eye towards the left, he says that may arrive it near it. It seems from the arrive the sphere that he holds to Leoso Edus Posel Bitoras Vadai. Okay, those are the key words that when we have Akasha here, then you Posel Bitoras Vadai. Now, what's the Chiddush here of the Ravid? We've already seen this in Tosfos, if you remember back on the previous page. But the Ravid goes very far. He wants to say that even the Bar Plugta of Rav Chisda, that's called Rav Huna, in the Gemara of Basalam and Aleph, which we studied at great length last time, so I don't have time to go over that, because I do want to make progress from week to week, so we eventually finish this project and go on to the next project. So in that shiur, we mentioned that Rav Huna says that we can accept each one of these two kitos in a future Eidus. But for this Eidus, we can't accept either one of them because there's Akhosha. Comes along the Ravid and he says, with regard to this Eidus on which there is Akasha, we don't believe either of the pairs of Eidim, even according to Rav Huna. So in Rav Huna's frame of reference, we go from one polar extreme to the other. We go from the extreme of this Eidus in which we believe both Kitos are possible B'Torah's Vadai, to future Adios, when they come to testify down the line in other cases, where each cat is believed B'Torah's Vada. So we went from one Vada, the apostle, to the other Vada. So now we go back to Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam says, the Baal brought two Adim, and they testified that at such a time, in such a place, she had this Nus. Now the father brings in two Adim and say, well, at that time, she was with us in a different place. That's called what? Hakhasha, that's called Trey Trey. What do we say about this Eidus itself, according to the Ravid? Not only applying Rav Chisda's opinion that for future Eidus we can't rely on them, and we saw in Tosfos that's the Torah's father, the Psul B'Torah's father, but even Rav Huna, who disagrees with Rav Chisda, says the Ravid would agree that as far as this Eidus itself, both pairs have to be thrown out of court. And the main point here is that we throw out the husband's Eidus. We disqualify the husband's Eidus B'Torah's Vada. And therefore, Rabbeinu Tam says, if the Eidim are P'sulim B'Torah's Vada, they have the same status as Eidim Zomimim, where the Gemara says explicitly that in such a case, the Baal will pay Me'asah because he brought false witnesses. And now we've established that these witnesses that he brought, even according to Rav Huna, certainly according to Rav Chisda, are psulim, they're disqualified. He brings in disqualified witnesses, because the Ravid says that in this Avis itself we disqualify the testimony, and that's the Torah's Vada. Ela Dakati Tzorach Biyuv. Now this is the top paragraph on the left column of page Tzadi Gimel. Ela Dakati Tzorach Biyuv. What this means is, we have done a great deal of research to try to defend and understand Rabbeinu Tam, and we may pat ourselves on the shoulders for a great piece of research. We've gone through an entire sugya of Baba Basra, according to the Rashbam, according to Tosfos, according to the Ravid was in Kiddushin, and we came up with a school of thought that in Hakhosha, the psul is b'toras vadai. But guess what? That really doesn't answer the question. We are still stuck with Rabbeinu Tam, and we don't understand how Rabbeinu Tam could say that since the Baal's Eidim were Mukhashim, meaning that the father brought in two Eidim to say that she was with us elsewhere at that time, therefore the Baal has to pay 100 sah. We still don't know. Dehine. Hachiv shel motzi shemra. Now, let me try to take a little bit of a break here, because if you translate these words literally, you may come to the to a misimpression. If you translate it literally, the reason why the Motzi Shemra is going to pay this knas is because he paid off these Edim. That's called Sochar Edi Sheker. He paid off Edim to perjure. what's the word?
Perjure.
To perjure themselves.
Yeah.
I wouldn't take it that far. How much money he paid him, or did he pay him, or what? He definitely brought them into Beis Din in order to falsify the truth and testify that this woman that he's married to had this illicit relationship. And that's what the Rambam says in Perek Gimel Vilchus Naira Besu. He says, "Amotzi Shem Ra'al Bas Yisrael V'nimtza Dover Sheker." Okay, you want to underline those three words. V'nimtza Hadover Sheker. We know that he subpoenaed into Beis Din two witnesses who fabricated the truth and told a slanderous story against this woman that she had znus. And again, if the Rambam says v'nimtza dover sheker, what could be the method and the only method by which we can determine that the Baal brought in Eide Sheker?
Hazama
is your only option, because that's the only time the Torah believes in the invincibility of Edom. And when I say Edom are invincible, untouchable, I mean that if, let's say, you bring 1,000 Edom against these two Edom, they're still invincible. We still believe that they're telling the truth, with the one exception, and that's called Hazama. The Torah here says, don't ask me why, that we believe the second pair of Edom who say Mani Ayisa. If that be the case, then even if I accept Rav Chisda, and even accept Tosfos, and even accept the Ravid in Rav Huna, the whole kit and caboodle, there's a psul in the case of Akhosha, of Vada, meaning the Edom of psulim, and we have to throw out their testimony. But it doesn't mean that we know that they plagiarize themselves. There may be halachic, rules and regulations and mechanics that operate here, that if a person has been, if his edus has been disqualified, then we can't accept him in future cases. He has a sort of a black mar, or smoke with his smoke. There's some sort of question about his trust, how trustworthy and how reliable he is. So the Torah might say in such a case that we can't accept these edus until they prove themselves that they did tshuva or whatever you might have. But in the meantime, in the interim, we have to exclude these edus. Do we know that they're telling the truth, that they falsified their testimony? No way we can know that, because they're two Edom against two Edom. We have no clues telling the truth. Ella what? Since we don't know, we have to passel them, and even B'toras Vada. But nevertheless, we don't know which of these two Edom are telling the are lying, are being are shakronim. And this you'll see if you drop down about 10 lines to a line that starts with the word chashivi on the right side. He says, "B'chai gavne davitrei kite edim amachishim zed zed, the two against two." Hare yesh lanu safek, we still don't know. Haimi nayu mishaka, which one of the two pairs of Edom is plagiarizing themselves? So the Baal is going to say, well, it wasn't my Edom who were telling a false story here, and they invented this whole story. It was the father's Edom. The afogad the svile la rived rabbeinitam the chashivi kimand the lesnahu. That Enoch and Avi were going to have to throw out these Edom as if they were nothing. Upsulim b'toras vaday. But mikolokom adayin yomar abal. The Baal still has the right to claim she'edov heim hamitiyim. That in fact, in truth, his Edom are the ones who are telling the truth. Isim kain. Therefore, ein lechayvo mea kesef misafek. And he summarizes in the last two lines of this passage. He says, if there's a possibility of saying that the Baal's Edom are telling the truth, am I chayev? Why should we have to pay me'asa? We have no proof positive for sure that he hired these Edom and he subpoenaed false witnesses. We don't know that. It's trey. Now, to exacerbate the problem, he says in the fourth line of the next paragraph, that there's another case in Rabbeinu Tam which is called Lokivdu Eidusam. Lokivdu Eidusam, Hainu, Bi Echad Mehem, Omar Echad Mehem, Eini Odea. If one of the two witnesses can't answer one of the seven questions, those are the seven questions of Chakiros, then guess what? We throw out the Eidus. And even in this case, Rabbeinu Tam says that we penalize the Baal for bringing these Eidus, and therefore he pays Measa. Well, what are you talking about? These Edom are falsifying the truth? How can you say such a thing? Just because they said any idea. You know, they asked him exactly what month of the year it was, and he didn't remember what day of the week it was, whether it was morning or evening. He admits he's not trying to lie. He says, I don't know. Yeah, I simply don't know. So in such a case, do we absolutely know with great certainty, absolute certainty, that the Edom plagiarize themselves? Is once again four lines up from the bottom. Am I chayv habal kuf slayim? So we have there are two questions now in Rabbeinu Tam. They're both the same. Two sides of the same coin. Why should the Baal be chayv kuf slayim either in the case of hakhasha nor in the case of lokivdu eidusam if one of the two eidim says any idea? And two lines below the end of the page, he says al ef shalom. There's no way you can claim vaday meshaker. That these Edom are certainly lying. We really don't know. We can disqualify them because we don't know whether they lied or not. And that's a black, you know, that's sort of a mar, that mars the reputation. But on the other hand, to say that we know that he lied, we don't know. Just because it was Hakrasha, because it was low key, they do so. And he reiterates this on the top page, Sadi Talib. He says, Kevan Shalon is barer sheshiker be'eduso. We don't have any clarity and certainty that the Edom perjured themselves, is therefore my chayv kuf slayim. We don't know whether he should be chayv kuf slayim. Did he bring in false witnesses or did he not? Vanira mucha. Now, Rabosai, there are two ways we can do this. We could read through this paragraph, or at least highlight certain words in the paragraph, or I can tell you what I think he's saying. Which way would you rather do it? I'm not insulted either way. We have 12 minutes, so we really have to speed it up. Well, I see we'll have to finish this tomorrow, but at least the main paragraph, the breakthrough, the revolution, is here in this paragraph on Nira.
Summarize
the text.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's summarize the text. He says the following. It's obvious, and we have no other possibility to interpret Rabbeinu Tam in the following light. Motzi Shemra is not because he brought in false witnesses, but Motzi Shemra is because he claims that his wife had this relationship, and he brings in witnesses to support his claim, and these witnesses are disqualified. Says the Gvuras Yitzchak, according to Rabbeinu Tam, it matters not why they were disqualified. According to the Rambam, who says that he's Meshakir, we know why these witnesses were disqualified, and that hence Hazama. But according to Rabbeinu Tam, we have a whole different understanding of Motzi Shemra. Motzi Shemra is not based on the fact that the witnesses of the Baal were proven to have plagiarized themselves and to fabricate the whole story. but rather the fact that he brought the witnesses in to support a claim that Ishti Zinsa, that she had this nus relationship. And at the end of the day, do we accept these Edim?
No,
if we didn't accept these Edim, and the Edim are Batalim, that's, you'll see on line 4, V'yachkach Nisbatlai Dusam, then in such a case, he is a Motzi Shemra, and he pays the mayor saw. He has to pay the fine. Now, what's your intuition about this? I mean, mathematically, he's correct. I mean, according to Rav Tam, we don't know that these Edom are falsifying the truth. All we know is they were disqualified. So he's really mathematically rewriting Rav Tam that the Chiddush of Motzi Shemra, the Kedusha of Motzi Shemra, is because he brought in Edom that were disqualified. But does that make us happy? I don't think so. Maybe it makes you guys happy, but I'm not happy, because so what? He brought in Edom. He was hoping in all good faith that these Edom would be accepted. And as it turns out, for whatever technical reasons, you know, let's say Lo Kivnei Dusam, he couldn't answer all the 7 questions because he forgot what part of the day it was. Or because there was Akash, but we don't know who's telling the truth and who's not. It's the first pair of Edom that brought the Baal, and the second pair of Edom that the Av brought into place. We're going to now penalize him? He's going to pay a massive amount of money? I'm not happy. How many people in the room here are able to empathize with my not happiness? Because, you know, misery loves company. You know. Not too many. Okay. So that's why I think he quotes the Gemara in Pesachim. The Gemara in Pesachim says that if a man sees a Dvar Erva and he comes to Beis Din to testify, we beat him up. What's the case? Haroa Dvar Erva, it's the Gemara at the end of Pesachim, Bechavero, Umeid Bo, Yechidi, please underline the word Yechidi if you have the text. Gemara even quotes a case, Ki Hada Tuvia Chata, Tuvia was accused of a crime. Tuvi is just the name of a person, not the name of an amor. The Asa Zigud, okay, we call him Ziggy. So he came in and he testified that Tuvia was guilty of Lomar Zagud eating pork. Lichudei and Ziggy comes in as a lone ranger. The Asid Bey comes to Rav Papa and he testifies in front of Rav Papa. Rav Osa, is that testimony?
No,
you need 2 witnesses minimum. So what did Rav Papa do with this guy Zigud? Nagde. He beat him up. I mean, he probably didn't do it himself. He had someone else do it. Amale. So Zigud turns to Rav Papa and he says to the Kvod Rav, you know, call it Kvod, Tuvya Chata, Tuvya ate the pig, the Zigud Midgad? He talked about himself in third person, and I deserve to be beaten up? Amale in. Yes, you deserve to be beaten up. Dechsiv, the Torah says, Lo Yakum Eid Echad Be'ish. You came into Beis Din without another witness. You know what your status is when you come in to tell Beis Din about so-and-so that he ate pig? You are, quote, this is Rav Papa's words, a motzi shemra. And therefore you deserve to be beaten up. So the Gerus Yitzchak says, what do you mean he's a motzi shemra? He's slandering him. Why is he slandering him? Afgav d'lo hayed sheker. He didn't fabricate a lie. He says that my good friend Tuvia, you know, went into a trefa restaurant and he fell prey to his evil inclination. He ate pig. And now you're calling me a motzi shemra? Did I say a lie? Why did Rav Papa beat him up? So what you see from this is Afal God below Hayat Sheker, even though his testimony was not proven to be false, and nevertheless he's called a motzi shemra. Why? Because he came in to testify alone as an aid when the Torah says you need 2 witnesses. And if you're not Edus, then you are slandered. That's what you see from the Gemara Pesachim. And for the Gevuras Yitzchak, this is a crucial Gemara to shed a light on Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam says that the husband brought in testimony, and unfortunately they found that this testimony is not a reliable or a qualified testimony. It's not valid. K'mochein misha bo lebezdin, who may be aidim, she'ishto zinsa, and then we can't establish that this actually happened because this batlay do some. Again, we don't know for sure that the witnesses are perjuring themselves, are perjuring themselves. Right, the two words that I get confused with, are perjuring themselves. But nevertheless, batlay do some, and we're saying that their edus is batul b'toras vaday, and even according to Rav Huna, according to the Rabbi, we have to throw out these edim. So you bring in two edim, and these are disqualified. You're like that guy named Ziggy who comes in front of Rav Papa to say about Rav Batuvia, erkes and chasav flash. You're a motzi shemra. Why? Because this is not true testimony. And if it's not true testimony, then what is it, Rav Osai? It's motzi shema, it's slander. There are two choices, and there's no middle ground over here. You have two roads diverged here. Either you got testimony, and if you don't have testimony, then you're slandering someone. So what I asked you was, do you want to read the text, or do you want to hear what I have to say about the text? I would like to rewrite this text a little bit. I don't mean literally. I'm not going to send a letter to Lakewood and tell Rabbi Sorotskin that he should rewrite it. But I wrote myself my own summary of what I think is going on over here. There's something called Binos Yisrael Ksheros. What that means is that every Jewish girl is assumed to be a ksherah, that she wouldn't, chas v'shalom, would not have this kind of relationship. The Torah points its finger at the Baal and says the following. The very moment that you come into Beis Din with a claim that your wife had this relationship, you are a motzi shema. You're a motzi shema. Because you're undermining this chazok that she has, that she's kibros yisrael ksheros. You're a motzi shema. And you deserve to be tarred and feathered. Instead, you're going to get off easy. We're going to let you pay mea sar kesef. The only exception to the rule is if you can absolutely prove in Beis Din, and don't you come into Beis Din, don't even dream of it, unless you can absolutely prove your claim. Because the very moment those words come out of your mouth, that she had this relationship, you are a motzi shema because you're undermining her reputation. And you're going to pay a fine for that. A strict, heavy penalty. Unless you can prove it. So normally we say a person is guilty, is innocent until proven guilty. Not so in the case of motzi shema. In motzi shema, you are going to be considered guilty until you can prove yourself innocent. How do you prove yourself innocent? You bring into Beis Din two witnesses that are absolutely reliable, that have passed all the tests of interrogation and investigation and have passed with flying colors. We know now, based on two Edom Ksherim, after accepting their Edus, that this woman has news. If you can't reach that level, pack your bags, go to your local bank, and withdraw Me'asa and pay that penalty. That's what I think is going on here. If he can't be mochiach tanoso ke'emes b'toras vadai, if he can't convince us that his testimony against her is vadai, because he can only prove so if the edus is acceptable, he's treading on dangerous ground. It's like a person who goes on a glacier. He has to make sure the glacier is very solid. It's got, you know, how many feet of snow packed in would make that glacier absolutely secure. Mitch, would you know? At least a foot of snow, I would assume. No? I've never been to Alaska, but... You've been to Alaska. You're not going to go ice skating on a glacier and fall in. I mean, you're a goner if you fall in, right? You're done with. So what the Gemara is saying here is that the very moment the Baal comes into Beis Din, he is ice skating on very thin ice. He is putting himself into a danger, and he's guilty until proven innocent because he's a motzi shem. That's what I think is going on in this paragraph. He doesn't say it explicitly, but I think it's written between the lines. Here's what I wrote: HaTorah hishira sabal she'ein lo lahalil. Lahalil means to slander against his wife. Shehi kechol bnos Yisrael amuchzekes bekashrus. Ella im ken yodea hu bevadai sheyesh lo edim shemeidim emes belief pickbook, that his witnesses would not be subject to any doubt whatsoever. Vechol sofek. And therefore, based on her chazaka, the Baal is considered a motzi shemra. The proof is in his court, the burden of proof. Lo chiach sheizitza v'edus hamiskabeles b'bezit liachadrish v'chakira v'eino mukhoshim klal. But if he can't do so, v'eino yochel lo chiach es tanoso ke'emes b'vadai, he can't prove what the v'yad shot of a doubt that his claim is true. Chayav hu midin motzi shemra l'knas of mea kesef. Why? Because he made an effort, a hishtadlus, to levaseis in English, to base his claim on witnesses, and we don't know what the status is. The status of these witnesses are very questionable. We really don't know. And in the next paragraph, he rejoices this new revelation of Rabbeinu Tam, and he says that the Rambam and Rabbeinu Tam have two different understandings of what Motzi Shemra is all about as far as the Knas. The Rambam says that the reason why he pays the Knas is because he brought in false witnesses. He brought in false witnesses, and we know the whole story is Sheker. How do we know the whole story is Sheker? Because of Hazam. And therefore the Rambam limits the entire enterprise of Motzi Shemra to Hazam. Comes along Rabbeinu Tam and says, no, Kevon Shin is Batlay do some. If the Edus of the two Edim brought by the Baal become Batel and Mevutal, for whatever reason it is, it means that there's something in this Edus that's unacceptable, or at least questionable. Whether it's Sheker or not, we'll never know. Because Trey is always going to be a Suffolk, as far as who's falsifying the truth. But nevertheless, the Edim of Psulim, and the Edus is an Edus Psula. That effort on your behalf, Mr. Baal, to bring in Edim that are Psulim, that already makes you into a Motzi Shemra. And I thought you could just add that sentence, that the very moment he says in front of the Beis Din, I know that you did this because I have Edim, and really he doesn't know because we don't even know, then he's considered a Motzi Shemra. Okay, Rabbi Osei, so we'll stop here. And there's just a little bit left to finish up. Maybe we'll divide up tomorrow between finishing this up, but I really want to get on to the next topic, Yezer Hashem. Okay, same time, same place. And again, dust hasn't settled yet in terms of what days of the week we're going to meet, but it's looking good for Monday, for Tuesday and Wednesday, right? Okay, good.